Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Light's free recording for November 2017. My name is Jessica Rios and I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light. This recording is an interview, a conversation with the topic Staying Spiritually Centered in Crazy Times. And I have a very special guest here today to share with all of you listening. I would like to welcome masterful relationship coach Charles Zook. Welcome, Charles.
Well, very good to be here with you. Always fun to be with you. And I love what you've done with this topic. We've gone over this a little bit ahead of time, and you have some great questions. And I'm really excited. We were talking before, I'm kind of excited to see what comes out when we actually get into the conversation. So I'm just as excited as the audience is to see what happens. So we'll see.
An ever playful spirit. Thank you, Charles. We have co-led before, you and I, workshops, and we've worked together in a variety of ways, and I really value your work. So I'm so happy to share you more with the world through this conversation. And so just to paint a little bit of a picture before we dive in, crazy times. What do we mean by that? I guess, you know, I'm recording here from Sweden. You're in California. And I heard some things happened in Las Vegas last week. There was a shooting and a terrorizing moment in the USA. And it's happened a lot of times in the last few years. We've still got rampant racism. People are afraid because of the color of their skin. Something we thought we were done with, maybe. On a global level, there's global warming. We got a planet that's changing dramatically. There are really intense storms of all kinds happening. A lot of fear. And people are still hungry and homeless on this planet when it seems like we have all the resources we need for that not to be the case, especially when some other people are swimming, drowning in their luxury, financial luxury. So these are crazy times, and I'm really glad to have somebody who has done so much work with couples, with organizations, with individuals to support people to live more of the lives they want based on their values and their vision, including staying spiritually centered. So you, Charles, in working with all the people that you've worked with, you've seen a lot of life situations. I'm curious, in terms of staying spiritually centered, let's look first. What do you see happen when people don't stay spiritually centered?
Well, the first thing that really comes up is, even to back it up to, what do we mean by spiritually centered?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that would mean different things to different people, of course. We kind of contrast spirituality with religion. Spirituality, as I look at it, is kind of an experience I have with the spiritual domain inside of me, interacting with the spiritual domain out there, nature, other people, whatever it would be. Religion is kind of when people try to organize that. And one of the first things that happens with religion is we have to decide, who's the us and who's the them? You know, who gets to join our club because you are spiritually like-minded? But it immediately sets up this, therefore, there are people who can't join our club. Spirituality is a different thing than that for each of us. And religion can be wonderful. It can also be misused. And so there's this thing, it's kind of a question of what is spirituality. And I define spirituality very broadly. If I have a client who's looking for a new position, you know, they want to get a better job, and we talk about, kind of their interactions with the marketplace. How could they be a compelling offer in the marketplace? What is the marketplace wanting from you? What is it you want to give to the marketplace? I will commonly substitute the word spiritual domain. What does the spiritual world want from you? What does the marketplace want from you? I have an MBA, and I see the spirituality in the marketplace in spirituality. So I think something that each of us as listeners would really want to look at is, what does spirituality mean to me? Mm. You know, how does it show up in my life? I mean, if we're going to talk about being spiritually centered, you know, so, you know, someone who is in more of a, maybe a martial arts domain might have a different take on what being centered, you know, kind of physically and mentally in their spiritual discipline of martial arts, that might be different from a yoga practitioner or a transcendental meditation person. So there's an immediate development of one's relationship with oneself in terms of, what does this mean to me? You can listen to what other people say, what Jess thinks for her, what Charles thinks for himself or in interaction with his clients. But for our listeners, you know, really we want to take a, have a conversation with yourself about, what does it mean to me? What does spirituality mean to me? What does being centered in that spirituality mean? Is that helpful so far?
Thank you. It is. And I really appreciate how you took us back to reflect first on the definition of spiritually centered. And so I just want, for listeners, you know, some of you are driving your car, so you can't write things down at the moment, but some of you are on a smart train or a bus or a, you're sitting in your home drinking tea, where you can actually pull out a pen and write. You can push pause on this recording. Wherever you are, whatever you can or can't do, just take a moment to consider what spirituality means to you, what it looks like to be spiritually centered for you. Where do you see yourself, and what does it feel like? Because in these conversations, these interviews that we have for Leaning Into Light, they're conversations, they're interviews, and they're also kind of workshops to invite you to have more of the life you want. So, Charles, thanks for laying that out. And so, spiritually centered, so it might mean something different to different people. Great point.
Right. And it's also going to mean something different to me in 2017 than it did in 2016, or that it will in 2018. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have to be willing to kind of be open to the growth and reinterpretation as we evolve and learn and grow. And this is really assuming that the listener is someone, not everyone, but that the listener is someone who wants to learn and grow. There are a lot of people who energetically fall more in a kind of a category of, I am the way I am, and I'm solid, and I have a personality, and, you know, it is the way it is. And they really don't look at themselves as something that is learning and growing and evolving. And then there are, I would say it's a smaller percentage, the kind of people who would be interested in listening, you know, your listening audience, Jess, that they really see themselves as dynamic. They're not solid. They're fluid. They're influenceable. They could read something and try a different approach. And I want our listeners to realize that not everybody's interested in that. So you will find some like-minded people out there, and you're going to find people who think that this is kind of a waste of time. How come you're not just making money or spending money or watching Netflix or something consumerish, which are all good things. But people that are interested in this have an additional layer that some of your friends, some of the people in your life, some of the people in your family may not be interested in. So a great place to start the conversation. So when I work with clients, whether they be an individual, a couple, or a business environment, being centered is something that I would consider to be paramount, critically important. If you want to be effective, if you want to be confident, if you want to enjoy your life, if you want to have fulfilling interactions with others, whether they be with yourself or with a loved one or in a business situation, if you want to pull off a presentation, you are not going to be your best if you're not centered. So what I work with clients, whether, you know, the various types of clients I have, is for a client to discover what that means to them. Every one of my executive clients, there are practices that they develop or realize that works for them For some of my clients, it's reading the Wall Street Journal. That centers them. For others, it's yoga or a silent practice or a walk in nature or great sex with their spouse. You know, there's different things that center me. And you have to kind of go on a little bit of a personal exploration. You can try things that other people use in their centering practice, but ultimately that's what you're doing, is you're kind of visiting what Charles does or visiting what Jess does to kind of go, oh, I kind of like the food when I go visit there. I want to have some more of that. And you kind of pick and choose and find what really works for you to have you be in touch with who you are, grounded in your values and vision, kind of in the present moment rather than, you know, most significantly in the past or the future for that matter. Most people, from a neuropsychology, neurobiology perspective, by the time we're 35, most people are pretty much fully formed. They are mostly running on autopilot from what they have already been through.
Interestingly, Charles, what I've heard recently is that every 7 years we actually recreate ourselves.
That's true also. During that 7 years that you're recreating yourself, most people are recreating a clone.
Yes.
Of who they have been historically. And there's a few people that in that 7 year period are looking freshly at, hey, does that still work for me? Is that still true for me? I know I've been told that. I know I believe that, but is it actually true for me? You and I have discussed what I call baby elephant thinking. And, you know, it's quickly what we're referring to that is when a elephant is full grown, and you are going to, it's nighttime, and you're going to put your elephant away for the night. You don't put them in a cage. There's a rope and a stake in the ground, and you put that rope around their back foot. And the elephant then will stay there all night. They sleep standing up. The elephant will stay there all night, sleep standing up. And in the morning, you come and get your elephant, take the loop off the back foot, and the elephant goes about its business for the day. You can ask yourself, why doesn't the elephant just pull the stake out of the ground? When the elephant was a baby, it was tied to the stake, and it wrestled and exhausted itself, and it learned categorically, when they put that rope around my back foot, I can't go anywhere. I give up. I get it. I'm just going to relax and chill and be here. As the elephant grows up and becomes bigger and stronger, it doesn't retest this situation to see if, in fact, it is still as rigorous as it was when it was a baby. So it retains its baby elephant thinking. So that we know that the elephant could have a big, strong, I don't have to be tied to the stake if it doesn't want to be, but the elephant itself may not realize that. And so I talk with my clients about really looking out for baby elephant thinking that I adopted when I was much younger, that it isn't like it's all erroneous. It's parts of it are erroneous. So what is the process by which we tell what is erroneous and what is actually helpful in terms of our thinking? You're constantly telling the truth about the outcomes, how you feel about it. Is it really resonating with your values and vision? That is going to, when you tell the truth, you are going to be washing away that which is kind of BS. And as you wash away what is BS, what is true for you becomes even easier to see in starker relief. Is this helping?
Yes. And it's putting a picture in my mind of, you know, a person, so somebody listening or you or me, just being curious, just being willing to ask the question from the new moment, not from yesterday or 10 years ago, saying, what's my truth now? And you said something earlier, a few minutes ago, about, you know, values and vision and living, you know, the truth of who you are, living from who you are. I just want to share a piece that recently came up, and you may be familiar with this, but it's a tool actually that measures spiritual intelligence, and it's been developed with the Findhorn Foundation out of Scotland, which I've been writing for recently, and in conjunction with Harvard, and perhaps there were some other players, but it has been tested, and there are basically 21 elements of this SQ21 test where you can measure your spiritual intelligence. And one of the key aspects of what's defined as spiritual intelligence is, as you said, who you are. So it's coming from not, do I have a cold right now, or do I feel too fat or too skinny or too old or too young, but who am I in the bigger picture on a soul level, on a really deep level? Am I being truthful to who I am right now? And it strikes me that as one possibility, being spiritually centered has something to do with that, with who we are on a soul level. And each of us listening can ask that question of ourselves. Am I being true to myself? And if I'm not, you know, what are those things and how can I go there? Do you find that that conversation comes up, Charles, with clients about who they are and how they're being true to that?
It normally comes up not in a philosophical context. Mm-hmm. It normally comes up in the context of a specific life event.
Okay.
You know, I'm having an argument, you know, with my significant other, and I notice that I'm hell-bent to be right. I really want to be right. I am going to argue this to the, you know, because look, you got it all screwed up, and, you know, you got your facts wrong, and that's not what I said, and it's like tooth and nail, like a WWF wrestling contest of who's right, who's going to emerge and be validated, and the other one's going to be admit that they were wrong. And, you know, so in when I'm working with this could be a corporate team, you know, that happens at all levels. It could be a couple, it could be a family. Parents with children wanting to be right. And you bring up, you know, what's more important to you? Do you really want to be right, or do you want to be connected? What do you really want out of this situation? And when just by posing that question of what's a higher priority, if you're going to have to prioritize connection, you know, love, you know, heart, you know, really being, you know, working well together, or am I going to prioritize, I want to emerge victorious? Which one is more important to you? And most people put with that question will say, you know, I want to be connected. And I said, well, you may have to deprioritize being right. See, so this is a practical conversation about who am I? Is who I am someone who wants to be right, or is who I am someone who wants to be connected? Mm-hmm. And once you have that kind of an educational moment, you can kind of look at, see, because the who you are is going to be what dictates what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what ideas and words, and ultimately what actions you're going to take are all going to come from who I am. If who I am is I want to be right, I'm sitting here thinking about what do I got to say next to be right, and I'm feeling really revved up about being right, and the words and ideas and ultimately the actions I'm taking are because I want to be right, because that's who I am at that moment. It's who I'm identifying myself as being.
And as you're laying out that picture, it actually strikes me that it takes a lot of hard work and clinging really tight to stay in the thought that I want to be right. I didn't mean for that to be poetic, but it was kind of poetic, huh? You know, I'm picturing just the other day here in Gothenburg, Sweden, there was a Nazi demonstration. It got broken down because the group had a poor sense of, you know, decision making, and they were rough with the police before the march even started, so they didn't get to have their march. The very next day, there was an anti-Nazi, so a sort of, you know, respect diversity in different races, ethnicities, demonstration, and there was tens of thousands of people. I just, as I picture people who are in a perspective of hatred towards other people for the color of their skin or whatever reason, I don't feel hatred towards those people because I think, my gosh, they're working so hard to cling to that hatred, to cling to being right. No, I'm right because my skin's white and we're whatever and you're not. Does this ring a bell for you? Do you notice that with people who you work with and they're well, they might, yeah, go ahead.
It only looks like a lot of work from the outside, would be my take. From the inside, my take would be that they are just largely on autopilot. They aren't thinking. They aren't thinking things through. They aren't, you know, kind of comparing and contrasting pros and cons. You know, the kind the person in the example we're talking about, and there are many variations on that, including, you know, people on what might be called the liberal or left side that are very entrenched in I'm right. I mean, that's very similar.
Absolutely.
The habit, it takes more calories. It literally takes more calories to think new thoughts than it does to think old thoughts. You know, things that are repetitive, things that we have thought through many times, we've rehearsed them. We've heard them over and over again. We've sung songs about them. You know, we've listened to speakers about them. It creates neural pathways that, you know, they're electrical and chemical in our brain. And the more we think those same thoughts, the easier it is to think those same thoughts again. And you have someone who, let's just go with the example you brought up, thinks thoughts about, you know, I'm angry that, I'm fearful about the future. I'm angry about people that aren't like me. I'm blaming my problems on people that aren't like me. And I'm angry and I'm upset and I'm, you know, hateful. You mentioned earlier that every 7 years we basically recreate ourselves. The cells that are created while someone is thinking those kind of thoughts, let's just, you know, like hate and anger, the cells that are created while the brain is thinking those thoughts, the brain is making chemicals that are related to hate and anger. And the cells that are made when somebody is in that state of mind, the cells that are made are adaptive to those chemicals. They are sensitive to those chemicals, the adrenaline, the cortisol, you know, the things that are associated with anger and hate. And they kind of want more of that. They are familiar with a bath of chemical adrenaline and cortisol and other things like that, the hormones that go with hate and anger. And they tend to want to recreate themselves and even, you know, be stimulated by those same chemicals. So we wind up with a brain that is telling the body how to feel. And then the body feels a certain way, hate and anger in our example. And then the brain is looking at the body to go, hey, what's going on with you? Oh, you're feeling hate and anger. Oh, okay, well, we're into hate and anger right now. And then the brain is making more of those chemicals and the body is reacting to those chemicals. And then the brain is looking at the body and going, oh, okay, we're still in hate and anger. And it becomes an autopilot that is very difficult to see from the inside. Easy to see from the outside, but hard to see from the inside. And it's hard to get out of that loop because it's very efficient. It's very self-reinforcing. The effort, from my point of view, really comes in, you know, we talk about thinking outside of the box. Now, having a new thought, reconsidering my beliefs, looking at it from somebody else's point of view. From my point of view, that takes a lot more calories, effort, intentionality to learn and grow. When I talk with couples about kind of this kind of a discussion, it's the difference between a couple that's not learning, you know, we're as good as we are and we're as bad as we are, versus what I call a learning couple, a couple that's learning you know, how to interact with each other differently than our parents interacted with each other, differently than how I've interacted with previous relationships I've been with. I'm not just rehearsing what I've seen before. I'm actually bringing fresh thought to when we disagree, which is inevitable, how do we want to interact with each other when we have a different point of view?
Hmm. Well, and you say when we disagree, which is inevitable, you know, you and I have worked together a lot and we definitely don't always agree. And I hear what you're saying about it being harder work, more calorie burning, et cetera, to actually develop new pathways. And I actually agree with you. And then I also don't. Like, I'm not going to try to be right even for myself here. there is a, you know, there is in that picture of a person who has a lot of hate wired in at the moment, anger, et cetera. There seems to be such a clinging, whereas this is me speaking. I'm not speaking for you or anybody else. When we just allow, when we open to the love that we are, when we open to the truth of the beauty that wants to show up for us, there is a sort of ease that can come through. There is a sort of, oh, this is so much. When I go with the flow, when I allow.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yeah. But for you to have been able to see that contrast at some point in the past, you took the time and effort to reevaluate. And when you reevaluated, you went, oh, so an example would be a couple that spends enormous amount of time and energy arguing. You know, like, oh, well, you know, we argue every day or, you know, once a week or whatever it is. We argue, we disagree, we hurt each other's feelings. And then I say, hey, instead of that, why don't we try reflective listening, where we're going to take turns like a talking stick and we're actually going to listen and we're going to do, you know, honey, what I hear you saying is, and then we're going to switch and we're going to really understand each other. And the whole process to discuss a specific disagreement might take 15 minutes of really listening and, you know, being there and, you know, delaying gratification on saying what I want to say. And it's really slow and, you know, kind of like, you know, kind of really loving and listening to each other. And, but it, the time it takes to actually be loving in the face of a disagreement is so much less energy than spending an hour or going to bed mad or getting up the next day and continuing the argument. Oh, yes, that's much more effort. I agree with you completely, but there are so many people that are more inclined to not actually do the thoughtful review that I'm referring to or that you have been through, to actually see that my habit, even though I'm in the habit of doing it, my habit is so inefficient. Isn't there some way I could get happy, you know, with a lot less energy? And Jess, you're saying that for yourself, you've discovered that. And I applaud you for the effort you put into finding that which is less effortful.
Thank you for the applause. And I just want to share, you know, with listeners, with you, with the collective humanity, the people who are all my brothers and sisters on some level, there can be so much pain involved. And it doesn't have to be painful to go through, to come to, quote, I don't want to say the other side, but becoming spiritually centered, you know, tapping into your spiritual center, however that looks for you, it can involve a lot of pain. Humans we all seem to need some amount of pain sometimes to wake us up. And I just want to, part of the reason I throw that out is because I don't want to convey, and I know you don't either, Charles, that it's easy and that life's supposed to be all skippy dippy all the time, because it's not the way it works. And I have personally had, you know, extraordinary emotional pain and physical pain through headaches. I don't need to go into that, but sometimes we invite pain as a dance partner to help us wake up, to help us be spiritually centered. So just really want to empathize.
Right. I would agree. The way I would put it is that in order for someone to have an interest in something different, the pain of continuing to do the same has to be higher than the pain of trying something new. The pain of doing it the same has to be higher than the pain of trying something new. And if you don't have that pain that what the way I'm doing it isn't working, you will have very little inclination to go out and experiment or talk with someone or read something or try something. You know, if what you're doing is working fine, you know, I mean, for instance, you know, Trump, you know, what motivation is there for him to try something different? Well, apparently everything he's done and, you know, all of his practices seem to be giving him success from his point of view.
You're talking about the current U.S. president, Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yes. And from his point of view, not from mine or, you know, even somebody who works in his administration, but from his point of view, hey, why should I do anything differently? I'm the president. You know, can you believe it? And, you know, so there's a spiritual gift in realizing that my autopilot isn't working. It's not fun to realize it's not working, but it can be the doorway that actually, you know, leads us into a reevaluation of, huh, I thought that was the best way to do things. Well, maybe it's not. I wonder what would be the best way to do things.
Yeah, it seems that there's quite a hunger, you know, on our planet for, gosh, isn't there another way? You know, and you have helped so many people find greater spiritual centeredness in their relationships with other people, in their relationships with themselves. So there, it is possible. People do it every day. And I'm curious if you've shared several tools so far, and I want to recap a few of those.
Please.
And just throw some things out for people who may not be able to listen any further, or maybe you can listen further, but you just want to jot some things down. So one of the tools you shared was to simply ask yourself the question, do I want to be right or do I want to be connected? Do I want to be right or do I want to feel connected? And to sit with that, especially in the face of conflict. Another tool you shared or practice is, this is around living your values and vision in life, leading the life that's yours, that's authentic, basically telling your truth. What is my truth? And asking that really powerful question. I really appreciate that. And then another one was reflective listening for couples. Is that something that you do with couples on the phone when you coach them?
Yeah, a lot. Yes. Uh-huh.
A lot. Okay.
And not just couples, families, that's something that is quite effective in business situations. You could imagine a corporate team that has a disagreement and they don't understand each other. They're just kind of holding their own position and not really listening to the other person. Also, reflective listening is enormously powerful with a customer. You're a professional and you have a customer who is upset about something. And do I want to be right? You know, that whole idea of the customer is always right. You know, how do I interact with this customer who's upset? Reflective listening can be part of an improved communication package that actually allows you to move from me against you in a professional/customer situation and move into, I'm here to connect with you, to understand you, to support you. I want you to have a positive experience. I want you to continue doing business with our company. You know, so it can be useful in a wide variety of applications.
Excellent. I also got wind that you are now offering YouTube, some talk through YouTube or something. Tell us about that.
Yes. Once a week, this would be Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, or not daylight if it's not daylight time, but basically 6 p.m. Pacific Time, I'm doing a hour-long stream on YouTube and Facebook. And if anybody wants to tune in and listen to me doing live coaching with a person who has called in, You can listen in. You can also, by going to YouTube and just putting in Charles Zook, you will find my station, or Facebook, same thing. And you can listen to old calls that I've had with people who have called in with something, either a couple or an individual that would like to talk with me. And if you would like to be someone who is doing a live coaching with me, the best thing to do is to go to charleszook.com and email me and let me know that you would like to be a guest on my stream, and we will set that up. And at no charge, you will be able to be do live coaching with me on the stream.
Great. And can people, I mean, that's a really excellent resource. Can people do that anonymously, or do they have to tell their name?
No, it is assumed to be anonymous. Nobody really cares if your name is Frank or Henrietta. what I do at the beginning of a discussion is I say, hey, nice, thanks for calling in. Where are you calling from? Okay. Oh, I'm calling from Sweden. Oh, great. And then I just say, so Sweden, you know, tell me more about what's going on. And okay. So there is no identifying. I mean, certainly, you know, people in your family might recognize your voice, but for the most part, you know, that's not really the primary issue. There is no need to identify yourself.
Okay. So if you always wanted your name to be Austin, you could say, I'm calling from Austin, Texas. You can just,
that's right. That's right. You're welcome to, you know, I'm calling from East Bejesus. Oh, well, can I call you East for short? You know, so yeah, it's just, so there is no, identification of who I'm talking with.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you for that. So you just go to charleszook.com, email you. You got the YouTube channel, great tools, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific. You know, in recent times, I'd say for me in the last few years, I've noticed, you know, the word mindfulness, it's a real buzzy word. And when I picture people being spiritually centered, you know, frankly, one of the first images that pops into my mind is somebody who's sitting cross-legged with, you know, pristine posture, and their hands are on their knees, and they're meditating, the sort of classic meditating, you know. You mentioned some other things people do. Some people might, you know, do karate or another kind of martial art, or somebody else might have great sex with their partner, or lots of things that people do to be spiritually centered. It seems kind of easy. Like, you know, I'll speak for myself. If I just wake up every morning and sing one or two songs that I really love and sing them loud, I will cry because of emotional release. I will get chills all over. I will get high off of the singing. It is a blissful way to start my day. And I'm going to be transparent. I don't do it every day. I don't even do it half of the time. And that's okay. I love me. It's okay, Jess. It's okay. But what, Charles, what gets in the way? Why don't we step in more to live this life of being more spiritually centered, more mindful?
I'm going to give you the really brief answer, and then I want to back up a little bit. The really brief answer is because you live in a culture that is constantly reinforcing that who you are is identified by how much money you make and how much money you spend. And our culture is centered around consumerism and profit. And all of the, I won't say all, a large, very large percentage of the modeling and exposure that you've had in your life has not been around being centered, singing songs, crying, you know, having that kind of a spiritual experience. If you were raised in the Aboriginal culture of Australia, every morning they wake up and they gather and they share their dreams. They consider the dream world to be the real world, and the what we consider to be the awake world to be the dream, the illusion. And in their culture, you sit around every morning and you talk about your dreams with each other because that's the real world. That's not something we do in our culture because that's not how we were raised. So that's a huge influence. And you're always bucking that because the consensus reality is what we are most familiar with. And your reality, that your personal reality that I get up and sing and it's emotional and I have a tearful release, that is always at odds with the larger consensus reality within which you find yourself. So that's the short answer on that. I want to back up just a little bit. We were talking about kind of spiritual flavors or disciplines, and you mentioned a few of waking up in the morning and singing a couple of songs, or yoga, or the classic, I'm going to sit still. Meditative practices can largely be broken down into two genres. The kind of classic masculine, not referring to males, but the masculine energy disciplines of meditation have stillness to them. I'm going to be very still. I'm going to sit here no matter how much my back hurts or how hard it is. I'm going to really be still, and I'm going to conquer my mind. I'm going to have this discipline, and I, you know, every time I get distracted, I'm going to, you know, make myself get back on track, and I'm going to do this right, and I'm going to follow the breath, and, you know, I'm going to chant this, you know, certain mantra or something, and I'm going to discipline myself to be still, and, you know, so there's this kind of control. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm trying to use very neutral words, but it has this stillness to it. The feminine forms of meditation have movement, a fluidity associated with them. Yoga, whirling dervishes, Qigong, Tai Chi. You know, there is a ecstatic dance. Tantra. You know, in the domain of sexuality and sensuality and spirituality, I am going to be involved with this motion, and that is my access to being centered by having a certain attitude about these motions, whichever ones we're talking about. So I would encourage our listeners to explore the different ways to access spiritual centeredness or spiritual practice or mindfulness to find what really works for an individual. And from my perspective, there is nothing superior about any of these different forms. And in fact, I really like to break it down into the component parts of this so that we can really see what's going on with meditation in such a way that what I really try to develop in myself and in others is not so much a meditation practice that happens for 15 minutes, but a meditation practice that's actually 24/7. Kind of how do you say his name?
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thank you. love you. My mouth would not cooperate with that one. Anyway. You know, kind of the mindful walking. I'm just walking. It just looks like I'm walking, but I'm bringing mindfulness to the motion, the air, the breeze, the smells, my muscles, my thoughts. I mean, the whole thing, I am bringing mindfulness to walking. And so the basic components in all of these is two terms that I think would be helpful for our listeners to make note of when I say these two terms that I use are stray thoughts and proactive thinking. So as humans, all the time, we are having stray thoughts. What a stray thought, as I define it, is a thought that you do not originate. It pops up. And we are having stray thoughts all the time. The thing that, if you will pay attention to this, that you will notice is that these are thoughts that I did not originate. In contrast to proactive thinking. Proactive thinking, by definition, is something that I proactively generate. It is a thinking that I want to think about. Now, neither one of these are good or bad. Sometimes stray thoughts are wonderful and creative and new ideas and things I want to think about. And sometimes stray thoughts are not so helpful. They're kind of off track. They're weird. They're just not really what I want to be thinking about right now. We have a lot of practice with stray thoughts. There are a lot of stray thoughts that we have that we easily just dismiss. We just let them pass through. You know, I'm at work. oh, it's so nice out today. Oh, it'd be nice to be outside, maybe playing frisbee or go to the lake or the coast or something. No, I have work to do. I'm going to get my work done. Okay. And so a stray thought, wouldn't it be nice to go outside, pops up. And nope. I'm going to go back to my proactive thinking of I'm at work. I really want to get my work done. Some of our stray thoughts are difficult to let go of. We are attached to them. Somebody says something and I get a big reaction. I am very upset with you. I didn't wake up in the morning with a goal to be upset with you. It's a stray thought. It just popped up that, hey, you pulled in front of me while I'm driving and now I want to run you off the road or I want to cuss you or flip you the finger off or something. You know, it's like, woo, whole bunch of stray thoughts going on there. And so it is underlying the different conversations that we're talking about. If we pick any one of these, yoga. I'm going to do this pose. I am proactively going to do yoga right now. And if I start thinking about what I'm going to do later today, whoops, that's a stray thought. I'm just going to let it go. What do I think of the yoga teacher? No, wait a minute. That's a stray thought. I'm going to let it go. But what about the person next to me? They're better at stray thought. Let it go. And this could apply to, I'm going to sit very still. I'm going to follow the breath. Proactive thinking. I'm going to follow the breath. Oh, here comes a thought about my taxes. Just let it go. Let it pass through. Okay, now, here's the thought about what I'm going to do later today. Just let it pass through. Follow the breath. The sexuality, a tantra kind of approach. I am going to focus. My proactive thinking is I am going to bring pleasure to my partner. I'm going to focus on them. Hey, what about me? Stray thought, let it go. I'm bringing pleasure to my partner. Hey, when is it going to be my turn? Stray thought, let it go. What about taxes? Stray thought, let it go. I'm focusing on giving pleasure to my partner. Any of these things can be, whether it's a masculine stillness or whether it's a feminine flow, any of these can be spiritual practice that allows us to be mindful of the difference between stray thoughts, some of which I'm not attached to, some of which I am, and proactive thinking that I generate. What do you think about this, Jess, or what questions are there for you for our audience?
It's actually, I'm seeing somebody in a grocery store, or I don't know when the last time was that I ran into somebody, but who was speaking out loud their thoughts, who was saying what's happening in their mind outside. And I know that there's a perspective sometimes that, gosh, that person's crazy. They're talking to themselves. And I, when it happened in the last few days at some point, I actually thought, what a beautiful act of transparency and self-awareness to be saying what's going on in there outside. Because as far as it seems to me, we can voice things out loud, like I'm doing right now, more slowly than we can actually think thoughts. Thoughts can go like 15 race cars in our head. And when we actually vocalize them out loud, looking crazy to some people, who cares? It slows them down and we have a chance to be more mindful.
Yes.
Is that what you find?
Yes. I would say that there is in mindfulness, there is a heightened level of awareness, and a heightened level of awareness with myself is going to constitute telling the truth, being observational. Yes, it is going to have that slowing down quality. I would also say for people that are listening to this with kind of the couple, how do I have a better relationship with my significant other, or perhaps with a child, a son or a daughter, that they're, slowing down is a key ingredient, as opposed to speed is associated with autopilot. Slowing down is associated with more awareness and more mindfulness.
Mm. Beautiful. Very helpful illustration there. Speed is associated with autopilot. Slowing down is associated with more, did you say awareness and self-awareness and mindfulness?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. So there must be some kind of relationship between speed and autopilot and all of us in some way contributing in this world to some crazy times underway right now. There are crazy times underway. I have to laugh more about it because I need to lighten it up because I can take life so seriously. When you step back for just a moment, Charles, and picture all the people who you've served, I know some couples specifically who you've worked with who just barely can find words to describe how much you've helped them. And I know that an aspect of that is being spiritually centered. I know there's lots more to it, but as you step back and you picture all the people who you support and then yourself and the people who are closest to you, what do you have to say from who you are to humanity right now, as far as an invitation or a sense of support, supportive words for being spiritually centered?
Well, I don't know if this is exactly where you want me to go, but the thing that popped up for me as you were talking about it is it in practical terms, noticing how it feels when I'm centered and noticing how different it feels when I am not centered is really key. Your body is the post-it note of reminding you that's always with you. And you can't leave it at home. You know, it's like, my reminder is right with me. And we have males and females in different ways, but we've been socialized to not pay attention to our bodies and to not listen. From very young, we have been taught, don't do what you know, Charles, you know, as a child, Charles, don't do what you want to do. Do what mommy and daddy tell you to do. If you do what you think is best to do, you're going to get in trouble. You know, you're going to be in, you know, so don't, whatever you think you should do about those cookies or hitting your sister or whatever it is, don't do what you think you should do. Do what this outside force is telling you to do. And, you know, so we are raised with a very strong messaging around a distrust of my own internal process, and we are socialized to trust outside. And so a lot of the work is really around kind of reacquainting ourselves with the wisdom that is inside of us. And your body, with the exception of taking drugs, you know, including sugar, you know, but your body is trying to give you the best loving information it can. It's like a satellite dish. Whatever it's exposed to internally and externally, it's trying to give you feedback. You know, ooh, danger alert. Be on the alert. Ooh, isn't this yummy? You know, let's open up to this. It's your body's always trying to tell you, hey, the energy field you're in the presence of right now, you know how the kids play the hot and cold game?
You're getting hotter, you're getting warmer.
Farther away, it's getting cold.
Yes.
Your body is, that's one of the main ways that our inner wisdom speaks through to us is, hey, this feels good. Move more towards this. Ooh, ooh, out, out, out. No, you're getting colder. You're getting farther away from your values and vision. This is not good thinking. And we've been trained not to listen to that. So if we can tune back into ourselves in terms of, when am I really happiest? When are my values and vision being expressed? What does that feel like to me? And there's a way that we get off track of our values and vision, and then it doesn't turn out well and it doesn't feel good. And as we progress, we can get better at identifying. Another metaphor that I use a lot is when you're driving down the fast lane of a freeway, for instance, and you're in your lane and the pavement is smooth, everything feels right. And then sometimes you don't pay quite enough attention and your tires go a little bit over to the side and there's those bumpy things on the side. And all of a sudden your tires go, you're going, whoa, 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 something's going on here. And you're like, you know, something's gone off track. And it's like, oh, I need to make an adjustment. I need to get my tires to back into the smooth part of the road. Oh, thank you for putting those bumpy things over there. Now I'm paying attention and I'm back in the smooth part. This is going on with us all the time. And if you look into it, you can get better at listening to your body, and your body will tell you, you're off track. And if you'll be, instead of blaming it on others, if only everybody else would be the way I want them to be, then I wouldn't have that, you know, feeling. Nope. It's an adjustment internally that I'm going to get back to my values and vision. Yes, this is a challenging situation out there, but I am going to be self-determined in terms of how I interact with this situation that's out there. I'm going to be me. I'm going to do this the way I want to be. I'm not going to be mean in retaliation. I'm going to come back with understanding and calmness, which is going to give me better results. If we listen to this, the real fun is as you start doing this, you start noticing it, not just when you're screaming you're off track, but when your body says, hey, you're getting a little off track here, and you listen. Mm-hmm. And instead of having to go to these really, you know, contentious places, and then you review and go, oh, that wasn't such a good idea, you can actually catch it sooner. You can catch when you are not, going back to the beginning of our conversation, you can notice when you are spiritually centered, in mindfulness, aware, self-determined, in harmony with your values and vision. And you can notice when you're a little off track of that. And if you can begin to notice when you're a little off track of it, your life becomes less of this kind of drunk driver kind of experience going down the road. And it becomes a little bit more of kind of micro adjustments, kind of like when you ride a bicycle. You know, a drunk bicyclist is swerving all over the place, but a normal bicycle person is making very mild adjustments. Oh, I'm a little, need to adjust a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. And the appearance is that they're staying centered all the time because they're making micro adjustments.
Maybe times wouldn't be so crazy if we all stepped a little further into the picture you're painting with how we can listen to our bodies. So you and me and all the people listening, and then imagine everyone who's loved by all the people listening, and then imagine all the people they love and all the people they love, and pretty soon you've got the whole planet, right? So we're embodying this way of being that is listening to the subtle messages, listening when the body has a cold. Oh, am I eating right? Am I getting enough rest? Oh, maybe I don't need to get the full blown flu. Maybe I don't need to down the line. Just picturing as you're talking about, you know, listening to the more subtle messages, I picture a whole planet that is preventing some of this craziness, some of the horror that people are living through with waking up one morning and learning that their child was shot and killed the night before for doing nothing abnormal. Just really appreciating the tools you're sharing, what comes of it, knowing all the people you work with, knowing all the people who are listening right now are actually stepping more into that space that you're talking about. Proactive thinking. I can do something about this. And so I'm at the moment feeling a lot of gratitude. And Charles, I just want to extend once again a sheer bucket of thanks to you for the work you do.
Thank you. Very much appreciated. A lot of fun being with you. A lot of things we've talked about, we've just kind of touched on them a little bit. And even with the clients that I work with, these are not the kinds of things you talk about once and then okay, now I understand. These are the kinds of things that you think about and then you try to apply them. And then it's kind of like, hey, Charles, I tried that thing and it worked pretty well over here, but over here it kind of blew up in my face. You know, what do I do over here? And there's either more information about that idea or maybe some, you know, other ideas that need to be brought in. I would really encourage people that have questions about any of this to contact me, charleslick.com. There's a connect ability to email me there.
So let's spell that out for people just in case somebody didn't see your name. That's Charles, the typical spelling, CHARLES. And then Zook is ZOOK.com.
Yes. And So I love getting questions, whether you just have a question about what we've talked about, or whether you want to talk with me on the stream on Tuesdays, or whether you'd like, that might not be a good time for you, but if you'd like to have a private conversation with me, I do have an introductory policy of talking with people without charge initially, so we can discuss that. So, you know, it's, I love doing this, so it'd be kind of silly not to say, really? You'll talk to me and not charge me, you know, initially? It's like, great, you know, take me up on it. Ask me a question. Let's have a conversation. I love being helpful with individuals, couples, families, businesses, corporations that are struggling with their application of this information. And really, to put it in simple terms, what we're talking about is identifying habits that cause me pain, that cause me suffering, and being curious about, I wonder if there's a way that I could get better results. That's good business. That's good for the family. That's good for a couple. That's good for me personally. You know, let's move away from habits that create pain and suffering for myself and others. And let's explore different ways of interacting with myself and others that produce more happiness. You know, get me better results, make me more money, whatever the, you know, the situation is. So I invite people to be in contact with me. Love hearing from you, your questions, your comments, your feedback, and beautiful thing. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks so much, Charles. You're so good at making the simple statements of what, you know, what these things are in a nutshell, and then also, you know, fleshing them out on calls with people and really helping it become practical in people's lives. So thanks again for joining us today, Charles, and for your great work, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Beautiful. My pleasure.
And to our listeners, very, very grateful that you spent this time with us today. I trust you've gotten something beautiful out of it for your life, something small, something big. The big picture is actually just a bunch of small steps. So if there's one thing that resonated with you today, I encourage you from the bottom of my heart to take it into your life and help it, help yourself have a better day and a better week from it. Again, Leaning Into Light is offering these calls as a gift from our core. We are extending tools to the planet for people to lean more into light, into the beautiful and the joyful things in life, because we know life inevitably involves pain and we love humanity. So it's a real pleasure to bring Charles to you and the other people who we interact with and want to share with the world. You can find out more at leaningintolight.com, and you can like us on Facebook. And if you want to reach out with a message about our call today or anything else, we'd love to hear from you. Take care.